Good morning. The Sefer Chassidim points out that when Avram sent Eliezer to the house of Lavan and Bethuel, by that time Avram and Sarah had made many gerim. They had been mekarev many people to Yiddishkeit. Now if you think about it, if we assume that if we know that Avram started his outreach when he was 3 years old, he had been doing this for some 140 years. Which means al pi cheshbon, there probably were people who were 7th or possibly even 8th generation Jews. Nevertheless, Avram, when he was looking for a wife for Yitzchak, did not turn to one of these gerim. And instead he sends Eliezer to his mishpacha, to Lavan and Bethuel. Now we know Lavan and Bethuel were flawed characters. They're oiv dei avodah zarah. You know, Arami Oved Avi, Lavan was certainly not a very, very nice fellow. The Medrash has some very unflattering things to say about Bethuel as well. And therefore, this begs for the question. Here you have a choice, you're doing a Shidduch, and you have a choice. You have a 7th generation Yerushalmi, or you have this Mishpacha whose last name is Arafat, so a bunch of murderers, Oved Avodah Zarah. And Avram sends Eliezer all the way to, So what's pshat? What's going on over here? Zok the Sefer HaChassidim, that what we see is that if there's a choice between a mishpacha that's oiv dei avodah zarah, but it's a mishpacha that it says has gemilas chasadim and tznius, he says that is better than a mishpacha that does not have midas tovus. And l'chor the pshat in that is, certainly, if a person has a choice, what's better? For someone to be oved avodah zarah or not to have good midos, certainly midos are much less chomer than the iser of avodah zarah, someone who's kafir b'ikar. But if a person is oved avodah zarah, a person has bad dayos, people change over time. You can debate with them, you can reason with them, and you see all the time people come around, they change their day, they change their, over time they correct their mistakes, they change their days, and there's hope. On the other hand, if you have a mishpacha where it's ingrained in them not to have the midos of tznius, of gemilas chasadim, that's something that is very difficult to overcome. And therefore, when given the choice, it was more important to Avraham Avinu to have a mishpacha of gemilas chasadim, even if it came along with this history of avodah zarah. Now, the point of the Sefer Chassidim, I don't think, is to tell anyone that if everyone here unfortunately thinks that his father was a stingy miser, they just give up. You can't do chesed. The point of the Sefer Chassidim is to bring out how important the chinuch of Gemilas Chassadim is, and how important it is to make sure that your children see, grow up in a house of chesed, and they see the chesed and tzedakah that people do. All too often, the chesed and the tzedakah that people do, it happens in their office, it happens out of the house, which, again, practically speaking, it's difficult, there are reasons for that. But it is important to make sure that children are exposed to it and they see the chesed and they see the tzedakah that goes on in the household. Now, we've been discussing the past 2 weeks the concept of the emachsere. Just two quick points before we move on to the next topic. And that is, the Chassan Sofer deals with the following question. What happens if you have an ani? And he needs food, he needs shelter, and those are things that are being provided to him. One day his tefillin breaks. Now he needs money to buy tefillin. Is there a chiyuv tzedakah to help him or to give him money that he needs to do a mitzvah? And it could be tefillin, it could be Luv and Esra, it's Pesach, Matzis. Does Dei Ma'achsoyrei apply to mitzvahs? So the Chassan Sofer in Siman Tzadi Beis has an arichus. Excuse me?
He always
had Kimchot Pesach. So interesting like that. Pesach, matzah is not such a good example. Because on Pesach, if you don't give the person matzah, so he can't have chametz. So he's going to starve. So to give him matzah on Pesach, everyone agrees that it's Dei Ma'achsoyrei, because what else is he going to eat? But what happens if you're dealing with a luv and esrog, tefillin, or in other words, you have to give him money in order to be mekayem a mitzvah. So the Chassan Sofer comes out, and the Ras Moshe passing like this as well. No. The chiv of tzedakah is Dei Ma'achsoyrei, is to provide for his physical needs. He's hungry, he needs shelter, He needs even covered, you see, Eved Larutz Lefan, Abdei Machzorei. But to provide for mitzvahs that they both say that is not Nichlal in Chiyiv Tzedakah. Now, certainly it's Gemilas Chesed. It's a tremendous chesed to help a person. But to say it's Dei Machzorei, they say no. If a person is mechuyav to do a mitzvah, and he can't afford, he can't buy a Luv and Eser. So halacha is, Onus Rachmana Patre. He's not mechuyav in it. So he may want to do it, but the bottom line is, since he's putter from the mitzvah, the tzedakah will not apply. Chesed it will be, but it won't be tzedakah. Okay, so now, although this is the Pesach of the Yegros Moshe and the Chazan Sofer, the Beis Shloimei and Siman Tzadi Hei, the different Malkiel and Chelek Dalet, Siman Tez Vav, and the Prima Gadim and Siman Laman Zayin are all mashma, not like that. They all have Lashonos that it's a kol shkein. Madach and Tzorchei Guf is considered, it's a Chiv Tzedakah, so Tzorchei Oilam and Tzorchei Nefesh like kol shkein. So it's a machlokes. Either way, again, it's certainly, the question is really theoretical whether it's chesed or tzedakah, but a chiyuv to help out, there certainly is. And on top of that, I think as you pointed out correctly, very often many mitzvahs will also become a dei machzorah. Because just like an usher that needs an eved to run in front of him is dei machzorah, and that's not a physical need, but it's a bezayin. For a person who's accustomed to this, he was an usher, he grew up with this. He needs to walk through the streets with his eved to service him. So for him, it would be a day machzorah. So certainly any mitzvah that you do in public, to tell a person to come show up to shul without tefillin, that mistam would be as big as of a bezayin, and therefore that would be a day machzorah. On the other hand, if it's a mitzvah that's done in private, he can't afford mezuzahs. So there, I don't know, put up a fake mezuzah case. It's not, it's something which is a bizarion. He might want it, but as we pointed out, dei machzorei, the fact that you want it doesn't make it dei machzorei. It's the fact that there's a basic need which is lacking. So in that case, you would have this machlokes between the Igros Moshe and these other poskim. But any mitzvah that's done publicly, I think would be loigara than an eved, and therefore it would be dei machzorei because of that. Okay. All right. That we'll leave up to each person. We won't get into the details of that one. So you don't find, that's the point. Dei machzorei, we saw, having fancy tablecloths is not dei machzorei. Because that's something which, although that's not a need, it's not a question of dignity. It's a question of you enjoy it, going on a vacation. You might have tzar that you can't, every year you've gone to Eretz Yisrael three times a year, now you can't. It's very difficult to argue that it's dei machzorei. It's not a physical need, and it's not a question of your dignity. So the fact that you want it does not make it tzedakah. And this is a very common mistake that people have. Dei machzorei is the Gemara's examples of giving him fine wine, it's if that's what he's used to, you can't tell him to drink Coca-Cola. He can't. This is not, it's like telling you to eat grass. It may be physically possible, but it's not dei machzorei. So we don't look at tzar, we look at, is this something, is this a real need that he has?
If he goes to shul and everybody has a beautiful estrogen
here. So that might be, that's what I'm saying. If it's in public, then it l'chayr should be loigara than an eved to run in front of you. Where if it's an embarrassment to walk into shul without a luluv and esrog, so the gabbai is nice enough, he gives you the sefer Torah to hold by Hoshanas, but maisa during halal, so if it's a bezoyan, l'chayr, it would be dei machzorei l'kul yam. But if it's done privately, then you'd have this machlekes.
Person's very spiritual. I'm not talking about how fancy the esrog is. If he is not a in tegashmius, and his being is one of doing mitzvahs, and he can't do the mitzvahs, why is that not dei machzorei?
So
that is food for a person.
So this is a machlokes, but the point they make is you're putter from the mitzvah. The fact that you want to do something that you're putter from doesn't make it into a dei machzorei that you can force other people to give up their money. Okay, let's not get, we have a lot to cover today. We've been going very slowly lately. I would like to cover ground. Stay afterwards for questions. Now, the other point that we discussed at the end of the shiur last week is who is the obligation of dei machzorei mutalah? So as we explained, tzedakah used to be given very differently. The system then, it was a communal system. you had a little shtetl, there were the aniyim, there were the ashirim, the gabbai would make a cheshbon how much we need to cover the aniyim's needs throughout the year. They would impose a tax on the townspeople. And when they were imposing this tax, when they were calculating how much stock of funds they have to raise, so that's where the din of Dei Machzori would apply. They wouldn't just figure out how much the ani needs basic survival. They would figure out the Dei Machzori of each ani. They would take the total amount, divide it amongst the townspeople, and that is how the tzedakah was distributed. However, in a case which is true today, where you have an ani who is machzor al psachim, you have an ani that's going door to door, traveling from city to city, there it is clear there's no chiv on any individual, or even on the gabbai of any particular city, to cut the person a $50,000 check, because that's his Dei Machzori. Once he's going door to door, once he's going to each city, the halacha is everyone has to, when he's in the city, you have to provide him with the food and shelter. You have to make sure he has meals, make sure he has a place to stay. On top of that, when he goes around, everyone gives him a matan muetes, everyone gives him a little something to help out. The hope is that collectively, among all the people and among all the cities, his needs will be met. But no particular person has a chiyuv to provide the Dei Machzori. On top of that, the Ramah added that even if a person is not yet machzor al psachim, he is a person who fell upon hard times, he comes to you as a friend, as a neighbor, as a relative perhaps, and says, this is what happened, I have these are my needs. So over there, the Ramah paskins, you do not have a chiyuv Dei Machzori to cut a check. You can be moidia tzaroi l'rabim. You can let other people know. You can call the gabbai tzedaka and tell them, listen, we have a new tzairuch. And collectively, the people together will give the Dei Machzori. That being said, if there are no other people around, or what's more common, you have people around, but they refuse to contribute their share, even though they're mechuyev too. So if there's no way to force them, then the chiyuv of Dei Machzori would apply. And there a person would have a chiv, Dei Machzori, to provide whatever the needs are. Obviously, it will be limited to what you can afford, and that we'll have to discuss in the future, how much tzedakah a person has to give. But, assuming he has enough funds to go around, the chiv, Dei Machzori, would apply in such a case, because there's no gabbai, there's no one else to help out. What do you mean, as far as paying tuition? Okay, we'll discuss that by Richus in a different share. That's not too big of a topic. So now based on that, there was the Rajba deals with a case where there was a machlokes. You had a bunch of aniyim. So what happened is that the wealthy people in town said they'll let the aniyim go door to door, and their thinking was they go door to door. Everyone give them a few dollars. We'll also give a few dollars. Maybe we'll give a little bit more. But it'll cost us a certain amount. The Beinonim, everyone else in the town, said, no, we don't want the Aniyim to go door to door. We want them to be supported by, we'll set up a gabbai. He will figure out what the Aniyim need, and he'll soak the rich. He'll go ahead, we'll collect it from everyone, and when we collect it from everyone, the halach is, the wealthy pay more. So this was a machlokes. So over here, the Rajba paskins that the Beinonim are correct. The ikur chiyuv tzedakah is kefi memoina. The ikur chiyuv is for a gabbai to go ahead, figure out what the needs are, go ahead and collect it, tax the city, and the tax is based on wealth. And therefore, the Rajba says that is what is done lechadchila, that you have a gabbai. It is done communally instead of going from door to door. Now, without getting into any politics. I know there was recently an election, and part of the issue, or part of the difference of opinion, is there's one group or one party that feels that you have to stress the social programs, make sure that the government takes care of everybody, and you have another party that's more interested in each man for themselves. If people want to give tzedakah privately, let them have a rachmanis and give it privately, but keep the government out of it. Now, in halacha, or the way the government or the system was set up, bimei chazal, it was clearly, the Rajba paskins, it is a responsibility of, if not the government, at least a gabbai tzedakah. There was a formal system where, collectively, they took care of the aniyim. They did not force the aniyim to go beg door to door, and each person will give based on his rachmanis. It was something that was done on a communal level. Now, that being said, what is interesting is although it is clear the wealthy paid more, but if you look at the tshuvas that discuss the way the taxes were set up, is there was a flat tax. It was, say, 10% of your assets. Now, it would come out, the wealthy that had more assets certainly paid more taxes. But I haven't seen any cases where it was a progressive tax rate, where the more you made, the marginal rate increased. So although the wealthy paid more, the rate that they paid was basically the same. There may have been an exclusion, you know, certain basic assets didn't get taxed, but to go ahead and to say, because you're wealthy, we're gonna make you pay a higher marginal rate, that I don't know of any makar for in halacha.
Was it asset?
That's actually an interesting question. It was a mix. It was certainly not an income tax. It was not based on how much you made. They really had no way of tracking how much a person made any given year. It was more of an asset-based tax. It was based, in other words, if you inherited the wealth, even though you weren't doing much with it, you still paid based on the wealth that you had. But you do find cases where they taxed assets that you were doing business with at a higher rate than assets that were just sitting there. So if a person owned a house, you don't make money off a house, so they tax that as a lower rate than if you had money, if you had capital that you were investing and turning over, there was taxed at a higher rate, probably because of this assumption that it was probably generating more income. So it's somewhat of a hybrid system.
Was this based on the fact that Meister is a flat tax?
No, not Dafka. If you go through all the taxes, there were certain taxes that were based on head taxes. Other taxes were based on Kefima Mainoi, and that seems to have been just a flat rate. Whether it was Meiser or Chaimish or their percentage, that really depended on, varied based on the needs of the community.
So now I love that basis for that rating up why it was, and how to decide this way or the other. It wasn't a lot of discussion on that.
What it was modeled after, again, there are halachas of whether you go kefim amoinoi or kefil gof. Why it was progressive or not progressive, I don't know if anyone, I haven't seen that dealt with. Even meiser based on income, we're going to see. Meiser ksofim, at least based on income, is at best probably a minhag. Again, it's machlokes, some hold it's a reis or a drabanon, but most places can hold it's just a minhag that evolved later. Or the truth is, it might be an early minhag. Some say it's based on Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, who gave Meiser. But Mekar Hadin, you don't really find a Chiyam Doiraisa of Meiser Ksofim according to Moshitzis. Okay, so now let's deal with a Meiser Shoya Kachoya. Before we get to that. As far as Dei Machzora, so after the Shir, so some people came with a complaint. And that was, we spent a lot of time on the theory, Dei Machzora, give him wine, give him meat, and evident. What's halacha l'maisa? How is it dealt with in a practical case today? What do you have to give to a person? What is he entitled to? What isn't he entitled to? Now, it was a valid complaint. So I did a little bit of homework, spoke to a couple of Gabbai Tzedakas, and I asked them, what's the practice? How do you deal with Dei Machzora? What do people get? How do you decide who has priority? How does it work? So the answer they got back, at least from a Gabbai Tzedakah here in Muncie, was that what they do is they focus on the most basic need. He said, basically today, the organizations can guarantee that nobody will go hungry. If a person is struggling, he calls, he needs food, he says, there's enough money, they have to work hard, they have to raise the money, but the bottom line is, there's enough funds, people give enough tzedakah to guarantee people get food. Even if there are people who aren't capable of cooking or preparing it, they can make arrangements. No one who asks for help will end up starving. When there's extra funds and when things were going better, the organizations moved up the totem pole and they were able to make sure that people had utilities. They were able to help out at least partially with doctor bills. Unfortunately, he said, those days are long gone. And since the recession, he said, we can guarantee food. He says utilities, the organizations can no longer guarantee. And any given day in Muncie, there are between 20 and 50 families that simply do not have utilities. And that being the case, there's no way if someone comes in and says, my day machzera is, I need an Evet to run in front of me, I need my fine wine, I need my Lexus. He says, there's no way the organizations can deal with the day machzera. We have to first try to help some of the people get the utilities back, and therefore, as far as a practical sense, the De Masore simply does not happen, because you first have to provide for the basic needs, and only after you have the basic needs, you have people, you have shelter, they have utilities, then they can work on what we'll call the extras.
So that being said, the guy comes to me, does that now raise my fees from the government to try to do whatever I can in De Masore?
In theory it could, but the problem is that the organizations are also coming to you and telling you that we need money to get people's utilities on. So if you're going to go ahead and give the fellow who knocked on your, it's true, the fellow who knocked on your door can't get help elsewhere. But the same way these organizations are forced to make a decision, am I going to help this person with his extras, with his day machzor, or am I going to provide heat for a family that's in the cold, so they provide the heat, they're going to focus on the basic needs, that would apply to you as well. Now again, with a relative, when we get to Hilchos Kedima, there will be exceptions. There will be cases where we're with family, sometimes there'll be a chiv to give the day machzor even before other people. But in general, even with Hilchos Kedima, you first have to focus on the basic needs, and then afterwards, when there's extra money, you can focus on the Dei Machzor. So in a practical sense, it does come out that unfortunately today, we don't have the luxury to focus on the Dei Machzor and the organizations, and certainly if there is such a need out there, there are 20 or 50 people without utilities, that certainly should be the focus before you move on to these extras and things that people can survive without. Correct. So Hilchos Kedima is an entire discussion, and you do find Aniyah Ircha come before Aniyim of other cities. You find Aniyah Yerushalayim come before you know, after your city, Aniyah Yerushalayim comes next. There's a whole list of priorities, but it's only priorities. In a case where one has a greater need, then you don't necessarily apply the priorities. We'll discuss that when we get to Hilchos Kedima. Now, Chassam Sofer deals with the following case. You had a city, it was a typical city, you had wealthy people, you had Baal Batim, you had your Aniyim. And one day, a tragedy struck. There are actually two tshuvas. One of them he discusses, there's some sort of flood, or some sort of flood which damaged or destroyed a good chunk of the city. The other tshuva, which we're going to focus on, there was a fire. And overnight, you had a city where you had an entire city, or a rave of the city, was simply reduced to ruins. Immediately, Klal Yisrael from all over the globe, when they heard about the tzara, they donated large sums to help the city rebuild. They created a tremendous keren, a tremendous emergency fund. And now the question is, how do we distribute the money from this fund? Now we have two questions. The first question, which is what we've been discussing until now, is what needs do we try to satisfy? There are some people, they were aniyim, they lost everything, they have absolutely nothing. They don't have food, they don't have shelter, they have nothing. On the other hand, there were other people who had a normal Bavatisha lifestyle, and suddenly also they're reduced to they're aniyim at this point, and their needs are greater. Do we focus, do we give the money to the aniyim who have the greatest needs and they're the easiest to satisfy? Or do we distribute the money, or at least some of the money, to the beinonim or the ashirim who until now were self-sufficient and now they're trying to maintain their original lifestyle? A secondary question is how do we define which aniyim or who is considered an ani to get stuck? Certainly a person who was an Ani before is an Ani now, can get stuck. But what about the Beinoni, who has a good job, he's earning a salary, he's able to make ends meet, but now he lost his house. He needs money to rebuild. So there, I think everyone would assume that he doesn't have a house, he's an Ani. He may have a job, he may have food, but if he needs a house, it certainly is an Ani. But what about a person who is wealthy? He has a business. And in theory, he has the business, he has the assets, he can rebuild. He can rebuild his house. But if you force him to take all of his money, to sell off his business, or to go ahead and take all the money from the business and use it to support his family, he's going to lose his business. At that point, he'll become an Ani or a Beinoni. So does a person have the right to say, I'm going to take tzedakah money so that I can go ahead, rebuild my house while keeping my business, while keeping everything going? Or do you have to sell off all of your assets in order to avoid taking tzedakah? And if your business goes bad, so then when you run out of money, at that point you'll be in ani, and at that point you'll take tzedakah. So how do we define, how do we prioritize communal funds, and what is the definition of an ani? Who is entitled to take tzedakah? So to answer this question, we have to go through part of Siman Reish Nun Gimel. And what the Mechaber over here passes is as follows. If a person has enough food for two meals, the halacha is lo yitzol mei tamchut. You're not allowed to take food from the tamchut. Mazon yadal tzudos. If you have enough food for 14 meals, lo yitzol mei akupa. You're not allowed to take from a kupa. Now the Gemara explains they used to have a kupa and a tamchut. A tamchut is they used to go around collecting food every day. And every day they would distribute two meals to the aniyah. So the halacha was, if an ani came and he had two meals in his pocket, the halacha is, if he has two meals, he cannot take from the tamchut. Because they used to eat two meals a day back then, not three meals. So if you have two meals, you have your food for today. Tomorrow you'll run out of food. So tomorrow there'll be another tamchut, and you'll be able to take it then. Since right now you don't need it, right now you have food for the next day, you have no right to take food from the tamchut. That was the tamchut. The kupa, they used to distribute once a week. This is more like, I guess, equivalent of what Temche Shabbos does. They would give out a package once a week. And this package was food for the entire week. Now, people had two meals a day. So for a week, 7 days, they needed 14 meals. So if you had 14 meals, and it came around Friday afternoon is when they distributed the kupa, so if you had 14 meals, you had enough to make it until the following Friday. So there was no heter to take money from this kupa. On the other hand, if you only had 13 meals, then you're going to run out before the next opportunity to take from the kupa, then you had the right to take. The Rishon LeZion points out that even though you had the right to take, if you had 13 meals, you can only take one meal from the kupa. It's not, you don't take the whole package. You just take what you need to make it until the next distribution. But al kol paran, the halacha is, if there's going to be another distribution the next day or the next week, you can only take if you're not going to make it until that next distribution. Now, but here, the Gemara points out there's a little bit of a problem. How many meals should a person need for an entire week? So you have two meals a day, times seven, it's 14. The problem is what happens to Shalosh Shabbos. So on that, there's a famous Memor Chazal of Asei Shabbos V'chol V'al Titzarech L'Brios. And what that teaches us is that if a person is holding by taking tzedakah, if he has 14 meals left, which means he can make it through the week, but he will not be able to eat Shalosh Shabbos, the halacha is, it is Kedait Asei Shabbos V'chol V'al Titzarech L'Brios. Don't take tzedakah and forget the shalosh. If you don't have the money, then don't eat the shalosh shuddas. Now, this is only true if... What? Oh, good. This is only true if a person can avoid taking tzedakah. The kupa, they used to give out tzedakah, gave out 15 meals. Because once a person's an ani and you have to support him, the halacha is you have to support him, you have to give him, he needs his third meal on Shabbos. It's only when you can avoid taking tzedakah, there the halacha is it's kedai to skip on the shalosh shuddos to avoid coming on to tzedakah. But once you're taking it, once the gabe is giving out, there he does have a chiyuv to provide the extra meal and to provide something l'kavod Shabbos. But to avoid it, then it's kedai to be asei shabbos v'chol in order not to take tzedakah.
So now, purchase him or his wife?
What? It's per person. Per person. His family also needs, his family is also aniyim. Adrav, if he only has a meal, the halacha is a chiyuv ksuba. If he only has one meal, it is very likely he has to give that to his wife. So it's for the entire family. Now this halacha is talking about a fairly simple case. There's a city where there's a kupa, there's a tamchoy, their food is being provided for. So halacha is straightforward. You can only take for the time period until the next one. Mechaber then continues. Vim yesh lo yresh zuz. If a person has 200 zuz, vein enoise behem, and he doesn't do business, he has 200 zuz, it's just sitting in the bank, it's not earning anything. Oy, she yesh lo chamishim zuz vu enoise behem. Or if he has 50 zuz, but he's doing business with it, then halach is lo yitol tzedakah. You can't take tzedakah. Now over here, this is really based on a Mishnah in Peah. The Mishnah says that someone who has 200 zuz cannot take leket shikha in Peah. And the reason for that is, 200 zuz is the amount a person needs to support himself for a year. So since he has 200 zuz, there's no reason to take leket shikha in Peah. If he'll let him use it throughout the year, even if he doesn't earn any money through the year, next year he'll run out, the next year he'll worry about it, and he'll take the leket shikha in Peah. And that, the Gemara adds, that's talking about a person who is not doing business. If you're in business, then 50 zuz is enough. Now, if you do a little quick math, the Chassam Sofer points out that it comes out, if you had 50 zuz, if you need 200 zuz to live, they used to earn a 300% return on their money every year. And that's why their 50 zuz of keren produced 150 zuz of profits. This is, they were obviously very successful businessmen. And that's why it was enough to live off. Today, to earn a 300% return just doesn't happen. Correct. This is investing with it. But someone who was doing business, you could assume the average return was 300%. And that's why, and it's more than 300, because since you're eating from it all along, you know, on day number one, you're eating breakfast, so it's really down to 49. But they obviously were generating tremendous returns, which, you know, are hard to find today. Okay, good. So if they had
a labor that produced the benefit,
fine. Whatever the situation was, there's this assumption with this amount of money, you're able to generate this kind of return. Today, if you have a grocery store and you're $50 of inventory, you turn over six times during the year, great. Whatever the mitzvah is. But the point of the 50 zuz is, it's a way to earn the 200 zuz throughout the year. Now the truth is, and this the Derech Emunah has an arichos, this halacha really needs an explanation. Because by Kupa and a tamka, we understand. If they're distributing food every day, so then the halacha is, if I have food, two meals, I don't need food for today, I shouldn't take. What about tomorrow? Tomorrow there'll be another tamka. If I have meals for a week, so I can't take from the kupa, because if I run out next week there'll be another kupa. The mission of leket shikha in peah is the same thing. If right now there's leket shikha in peah and I want to take it, if I have enough to survive for a year, halacha is I can't take it, because if I run out of money next year, so there'll be another crop, and I'll take my leket shikha in peah then. What about today, where there is no leket shikha in peah? Does this halacha of reish zuz apply? So over here, the Mechaber Paskins in Sif Beis, Yesh Oymim, Shloinem Rashiurim Halalu Elabimehim, Av Bizman Hazeh Yochel Lita Achi Olo Keren, Kdeshi Esparnes Hu Bnei Beisa Meho Revach. Today, where there's nothing set, we don't have a kupo or tamkoy that's going to guarantee mezainis every day or every week. We don't have leket shikha in peah that every year there'll be an opportunity for the ani to get. He says you're allowed to take unless you have enough capital to support your family from the profits. Now today, that would make everyone ani. Oh, very good. It's like this. The Shevet Halevi says this applies only when a person doesn't have any parnasa. The person doesn't have a job. All he does is he's an ani. So unless he has some way to provide for his family, he's a din of an ani, he can take tzedakah. On the other hand, if he has a set job, he may have absolutely no money in the bank, but his needs for the year are provided. As long as he continues working, as long as he continues his job, he'll be taken care of. Now if his job doesn't provide, even with everything, he's working poor and there's a shortfall. So that shortfall, he'll be able to collect tzedakah for. But assuming he has a job, even though he has no savings, since there's a mahalach, he has a way to provide for his family for a year, then he would not be able to take tzedakah. There's an interesting derech emunah, it's a chiddush, but he says that if someone is getting a koil check, he says it really depends. If the reish koil took achrayus, he's going to go ahead, he's going to personal responsibility for the koil check, he says, that's lagara than a salary, and he wouldn't be able to. But if it's a koil where the reish koil said, I'm not taking an achrayus, if it comes in, good, if it doesn't come in, I'm not responsible to go ahead and get it for you, there he says it could be, it wouldn't count, and he still would be considered an ani.
Does this impact retirement? Like a person, you make his salary, but if he retires, he won't have enough. Does he have to work longer than the person has?
So if right, we don't find anywhere the person has a halakhic right to retire. If he's able, physically able to work, then he's not an ani. I'd like to retire, move down to Florida. It's sunny there. It's a beautiful thing, but it's very difficult to call a day machzorek. On the other hand, a zokain who cannot work, he's physically unable, he's old, he's weak, so he's, that certainly would be an ani, and that's the day machzorek would be what, you know, whatever he needs. The fact that he was able to work and had a long and productive career doesn't change the fact that right now he's an ani. Now, this is the Shevet HaLevi. Now, the truth is, there's another, the Derech Emunah learns, you know, it's not, the Mechaber, the way he says this halacha is, that you that until you have enough keren so that you can live off the profits, you have an ani. The Chassam Sofer that I just said over before seems to have a different shah in the Mechaber. So, because the Chassam Sofer learns, he had 50 zuz, he says, what's the return on the money? He says, you're making a 300% return. That means your 50 zuz is earning 150 zuz of profits, and therefore you're not an ani. Now wait a second. If you need 200 zuz to live, and your 50 zuz produces another 150, then at the end of the year, what are you going to be left with?
Zero.
So the Chassam Sofer seems to have understood that the pshat is not that you need to have enough money in the bank or enough capital that you'll be able to live off the profits alone. He seems to learn the same way the shear of 200 zuz is. If you have enough money for this year, you can take tzedakah. What'll be next year? Next year you worry about it, you'll take tzedakah then. So the Chassam Sofer seems to have learned that even today, if you have enough capital, that with the business that you're in, your investments, whatever it is, you'll have enough that for the next year you can survive by burning through the capital. The Chassam Sofer seems to hold that you don't have a din of an ani at that point and you would not be able to collect. Now, the Derech Emunah has some sort of a pshara. He says that there are two dinim. There's one halacha, like we said before, about the kupa and a tamkli, that if you have enough to make money or enough food to make it to the next distribution, you can't take tzedakah. He says there's a cap of a year that anyone who can survive a year doesn't have a din of an ani. So even though there's no lucky chicken pay. And even though next year we do not know what will be, since bottom line is for the next year your needs are going to be satisfied, you have that kind of capital, he says you don't have a dinner of money, next year you'll worry about it then. Now later on, he says if you know you're making a chasana in 2 years, he says there you could collect because it's impossible to collect so quickly. So that's something which needs, where it needs time, he is matarit. But if it's not the point, if it's just a question of at one point do I become an ani, he says as long as you have enough that between the keren and the ribbis and the revachim, you'll survive the year, that would not be an ani and you would not be able to collect tzedakah. Now the poskim also add that you can have many cases where a person is the middle class, he's able to support his family, but special needs arise, where in the case of a flood, although he's able to support his family, now he has a specific need. The house burned down, he has a specific need, he knows he's making a chasana, a medical expense comes up. There, although you have 200 zuz, you have enough to support your family under normal circumstances, if right now there's an extraordinary expense, right now you would have the right to collect tzedakah for that expense, because you can't cover that expense and continue to feed your family for the rest of the year. So you don't have to burn through all of your capital and then take tzedakah. You can collect right now for this expense because based on what just came up, you now do not have enough between your salary and your savings. You don't have enough to make it through the entire year. Oh, so that we'll get to in a minute. What your mechuyev to, what assets or what your mechuyev to sell. We'll get to that in a moment. There's actually a cute way to remember the shear of 200 zuz is tzedakah is bigamatria 199. So if you have up to 199 then you can take tzedakah. Anything above that, once you have the 200 zuz, then you can no longer take tzedakah. So now let's deal with the next question. That is, what are we talking about? Are we talking about cash or are we talking about assets? Person owns a house. Is he mechuyev to either sell his house or the modern day equivalent, take out a home equity and burn through all of the equity that's in the house, or can he take tzedakah? For that matter, most people, especially if they were middle class, they had a job, they suddenly, something came up, they fell upon hard times, So you walk into their house, it's full of junk and toys and furniture. You have things that have value. Is an ani mechuyev to sell everything that he has in order to avoid taking tzedakah? So over here, let's continue. This is still in Reish and Gimel and Sif Aleph. Mechaber writes it like this. He has a house, and he has a lot of kelim in his house. But he doesn't have enough to support his family for the year. You're allowed to take tzedakah. You don't have to sell out. You don't have to have a garage sale and clear out your house before you take tzedakah. Even if you are very wealthy, you have everything in your house. You had kelim that are gold and silver. You don't have to sell it. If right now you need the money to support the family, you have the right to take tzedakah. Now, although the Mechaber starts with the halacha psukah, the Mechaber now is going to qualify this halacha and make it almost irrelevant. Zok the Mechaber, when is this halacha that you do not have to sell anything, you can keep it, you can just take tzedakah? B'kli achila shtia malbush u'mutzayis u'kiyayis ben. Things that you eat with, your plates, your silverware, your clothing, your beds, things that you have a direct hanoas aguf. Those things, if you were always accustomed to using fancy silverware, eating off fancy plates, you tell a person now, just take a paper plate, take something cheap, the person doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to sell off his things. Anything which is not a tzarchei haguf, you have to sell before you take tzedakah. That means before the person comes for tzedakah, he has to sell off his iPad, his iPhone, all of the toys, all of the furniture, anything besides his bed or his table, thing, basic needs that you have for his guf, thing like clothing, anything extra that halacha is you have to sell before you take tzedakah. That's the first exception. And then the Mechaber says, v'hodeim l'chayven oseilim k'kli tashmisha shakesev azov. Even the kli tashmisha, the fact that if he has fancy dishes, he does not have to sell it, he can take tzedakah. Dafka calls man shein etzarech lito me'akupa. Ela noitel b'seiser mi'achidim. That's only when he's being helped privately by individuals. So if you're quietly, people don't know about the situation, you have people who are giving you money on the side, quietly, there you can keep your fancy dishes. Avlom ba lito me'akupa. If you're coming from the kupa, if you're coming to take from the public, the halacha is, lo yitnu loy ad she'yimkor kelim. The kupa does not give him anything until he sells his kelim. And the pshat is, since the person has the ability to raise the money, then he has a chiyuv to do that before he takes money from tzedakah.
Is this a chiyuv on the receiver, or a chiyuv on the guy like tzedakah in terms of dishing out the money responsibly?
It's both. It is halacha that the yochid cannot ask for it, and the gabbai should not be giving it to him. If he has the assets that he could, if this person recipient has the assets that he could sell, he could raise the funds. So then you give priority. You give the money to other aniyim that have no fallback and don't have these golden or silver kelim. He shouldn't be taking, right. Now there is a very big, there is something to realize, and that is, that let's say, and today this is probably usually the case, let's say a person has, you have a middle class person who fell upon hard times, wants to take tzedakah. Now we tell him, you can't take tzedakah, because if you're taking from a gabbai, you have to sell all of the nechasim in your house. Now if you would have had a garage sale, and sell all of the tzedakah and all of the junk that you have in your house, how much are you going to raise? Now, it's very likely that if you sell everything, people today are not really interested in buying you very many used things. So it's very likely that even if you, after you sell everything, you'll be able to raise less than 200 zuz. Less than what the family needs to support itself for a year. Now, if that's true, the same way if you have 190 zuz of cash, then you have the right to take tzedakah from a gabbai. So certainly if you have 190 zuz of assets, you also have the right to take from the gabbai. So this halacha is only, again, one of two cases. Either the person has enough items that if he sells it, he'll have enough to support his family for a year. So there's a chiv to sell it before you take tzedakah. Or if he has less, it'll come out, it'll make a difference of how much tzedakah he can take. Because if he can sell his assets and he'll be able to come up with 190 zuz, then he can't take from the gabbai tzedakah more than 10 zuz. Because once he has 10 zuz, then at that point he's an usher, he can no longer, he can't continue to take. But I think today it's where things have very minimal value, it's usually not so negaya. Where it will come up is a person has fancy silver, he has a beautiful becher or a silver, beautiful silver menorah and things like that that have real value. So in such a case, if he has a question, should he take tzedakah or not, if he's able to sell it and support the family for a year, then he would not be able to take the tzedakah.
Right.
So anything which is de machsoiroi, anything which, if he didn't have, you'd be able to buy him as de machsoiroi, certainly there's no chiv to sell. But is a couch de machsoiroi? Not so sure. If it's in private, he has a place to sit, would that certainly be. But if he has places to sit, he just wants a couch to relax on. I'm not so sure.
A car?
It probably is de machsoiroi. Because you can't get around. I mean, especially in a place like Muncie where you can't get around. Now, I don't know what second car. Again, this, you need people local. These are difficult questions. But whatever is above the Deim Achsari, whatever the Gabbai Tzedakah wouldn't give to him, even if they had money, because this is considered a luxury, this is considered something extra, so that would be something which there would be a chiv to sell. Now there is, what? So there you have to figure out who owns it. Now if it's the wife, owns the jewelry and that's the only thing that she owns, and it's not enough to support her for a year, then they'll be on you. So that's why in most cases it won't be negayah. She has $100,000 of jewelry and a chanami. She cannot take tzedakah until she sells it because that stumble would not be day machzara. Now there is just one other halacha. Okay, we're out of time, but next week we're going to discuss. There is a concept of when you have karka and you're selling it. If you're going to sell it at a loss, then there are cases where you do not have to sell it. So it's possible also today, when people are not interested in buying used items, perhaps this would be similar to selling something at a loss, there'll be no chiv to sell. Now it's a chiddush because if this is the value, it's not, no one buys used things, maybe it's just not worth very much. We'll discuss it more next week. And next week also, Mirza Shem, we'll get back to the end of the Chassam Sofer for what he did in the disaster.
These taxes, would they tax everybody, including poor people?
But it wasn't, there was an